Hey everybody, it's John. A reminder to check out stealthisbeard.com. Not only can you sign up for our newsletter, which Justin and I put minimal effort into each and every week, and you can find out what's happening on the show, but you can also get an archive of all of our shows and buy some of our stellar merchandise, which includes glassware. You can now buy black glasses just like us on the show. You can get our old Tiku glasses and a variety of t-shirts. So go to stealthisbeard.com to check out all of that.
Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
All right, hey y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Monday, and we are stealing beer.
Closely.
I am Augie Carton in a Zoom chat with Zach Adams and two Justin Kennedys, neither of whom are really Justin Kennedy. So
technology is weird.
Way to put me on my heels, boys. I'm punching out of the corners here. And what's funny is in the videoless Zoom screen, I have nondescript white figure of Augie, nondescript white figure of Zach Adams, two very stunning pictures of Justin Kennedy on a boat or a dock, and
Hamlet.
None of the above in real people. Anyway, how is everybody? John Hall, how was your time since last time we stole beer together? What's going on in your world? Everything cool?
Time is irrelevant these days. It's one day bleeds into the other. It's always 5 o'clock on Monday, it seems, because it's never actually 5 o'clock or Monday or whatever. Things are good. Yeah, just writing about beer, drinking beer, hanging out with the family. No complaints.
Nice. Good for you. What about you, Brian Cash, Justin Kennedy?
I'm just recovering from a little Halloween party last night where I went as Smokey from, or I went as the Bandit from Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh,
and I drank a bunch of banquet beer.
More importantly, to completely get that costume right, you need a woman in perfect 70s gear who is smaller than you. Could you find one of them?
No.
That's hard to find, right?
Yeah. My girlfriend, she dressed up as a cat for the party, but I think she could have been Buford T. Justice if I thought about it.
Oh, that would have been good.
Cat and the Bandit?
Yeah, it was Cat and the Bandit. You got to see this jacket that I bought. It's fucking sweet.
Now, were you drinking banquets?
Put it on our Instagram.
Yeah, I was drinking banquets, man.
Nice. At least you saw it through.
I drank a sixer at banquet and some other local lager. So it was nice. A great evening.
At your COVID Halloween party. Good for you.
All right. So let's get off of COVID Halloween and reliving the 70s. Zach Adams, Fox Farm Brews. Now, Zach, before the whole world went to hell in a handbasket and everything became how much beer can you fit through a 3-foot hole in the wall to get out to the public safely, it was a semantic interest in our more innocent days of craft in America 2019 into 2020 of what constituted a farm brewery. So I figure we can start our conversation off with Zach Adams of Fox Farm about what your farm brewery is and how much is farm and how much isn't and what it means to you. Because this was a conversation I was enjoying watching develop that just got sideswiped by how the hell do we keep the lights on? So yeah. How's your farm?
First, thanks for having me. Happy to be here. Yeah, it's right there in our name, Fox Farm Brewery. But we've always kind of, we've never been comfortable embracing the title of a farm brewery.
Oh, really?
I'm much more comfortable kind of with the descriptor farmhouse brewery. I literally live here, and this is an old dairy farm. But we are not super engaged in growing anything here on this land. We have some trials of some fruit trees, brambles, some berries. We have some bog myrtle and other botanicals in the ground, but just super small scale stuff, just barely scratching the surface. We also have my wife's family vineyard it's purely a agriculture endeavor. There is actually no winemaking going on there, just grape growing. That's just down the street from the brewery, but much more comfortable with the title farmhouse brewery, even though we do reside on what was for about 30, 40 years a dairy farm.
Cool. But you do go further into, I guess it doesn't matter what the world thinks, but what I think is a farmhouse brewery than some. You have a cool ship and stuff, right? Am I wrong on that?
Yeah. Okay. And actual farmhouse brewing, and certainly a slant towards, at least with that program, sourcing local seasonal ingredients is a big part of what we do. But our cool ship specifically, it's the first piece of equipment to make its way into the brewery. We had a frame of room in around it. But as far as that side of our brewery, it's still kind of something we're yet to reveal. In large part, our first couple of years of brewing, we just simply didn't have the space, and for other practical reasons, the ability to really jump in and dedicate ourselves to spontaneous cool ship brewing. But it was just in this past season, just about a year ago this month, that we were able to kind of jump in with the completion of a new purpose-built barrel storage space.
Oh, cool.
And then the willingness to go at it fully. And one thing we did learn, just, 2-3 years of dabbling, not that we wanted to dabble, but we were forced for those reasons, is that, we really needed to commit ourselves more fully in order to see what we want to see out of that program.
Yeah, you need at least the one body who is both a good note taker and good speechifier to tell everybody else what's going on in there, right? You can't send a random guy in every Tuesday, hey, go taste everything and tell me how it's going. You need exactly. That one guy who's like, okay, things have moved a little left on barrel 8.
I'm always curious, brewer standpoint, though, of like, do you know what you're looking for, or do you know, what you want to have, the beer speak to you?
Only to a certain extent, but just to Augie's point, for us to kind of glean anything over 3 batches a year with a feedback loop of at least 8 months before you really know. It's just so hard to learn anything. So it's really taken some economies of scale just to gain the knowledge required to iterate and improve. And for us, it's still very early coming off of last season, but we're loving what we're tasting. And there is a bit of a target. I mean, almost all of our spontaneous brewing is kind of done in a lambic inspired way. So there's a quality there in lambic that's just unmistakable. And mm-hmm. when you experience that from a spontaneous beer producer or elsewhere, it's very eye-opening and exciting. And that's what we've been looking for from day one. And I think for the first time are starting to see some of those intangibles in a more meaningful way.
Well, so much of that is time, right? You guys, are you officially 3 years old? Am I underestimating that or overestimating that? Is it longer? I thought it was 17.
Yeah. Yep. We started brewing in March of 17.
Okay. So yeah, right around there. So a lot of that, even if it was slow to roll out, as you're saying, a lot of that real, what we call true lambic is just time, right? Even guys who roll out purely only intending to ever make spontaneous and real authentic European style spontaneous beers, you can see that they will be good year one, but they can be great 1 year old beer, but when you have time behind you of letting those bugs get into the wood as well as the liquid as well as the house, that depth of character that I think you're referring to is a thing that starts showing up 3 to 7 years, right? So you're just hitting that stride anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, and there's kind of two elements there that most people wouldn't think about, where you do have this runway of really trying to learn what works in your space for your equipment and your oak handling procedures, and then certainly your actual like microbiological environment. And I always point to Allagash in that regard, one, because they were, one of the first, if not the first, to pursue these beers in the country. And they've just been kind of this beacon for all of us to look to and try and learn how to carve our own path. And I think they're pretty candid about it taking 6-7 years to have a market ready product to put out there.
I think next, the other thing leads. Okay, go.
Oh, I'm sorry. But the other thing that's kind of causing us to take our time with it is, what do you want to put out there as the first example of what a spontaneous beer from Fox Farm Brewery tastes like? And there's wonderful, like Saison inspired beers we have in barrels right now that could certainly be released on a shorter turnaround time to put something out there. But we are looking for a certain level of depth and complexity to be kind of this flag in the ground of what our spontaneous beer is going to be like.
Yeah, actually, and then you actually, so the Allagash kind of offers the entree into the next question is, so, because I also know you to be respected and appreciated by my friends that are saisoneries. You know what I mean? So where are you separating out?
Is that a professional term?
Carving out that tranche of your beer, right? Because you definitely do saisons. I've definitely heard, I don't think I've had them yet, but I've heard great stuff about them. And maybe if the real Justin Kennedy was one of the three Justin Kennedys I'm looking at, could answer that the can showed up at some point. But you do have a strong Saison program, which I would think if I was talking about what we do in that side of our stuff, I would lump into this discussion, but you seem to be carving out. So where does the, all right, so this spontaneous program is going to where it's going to be, and it's going to be much more traditionally lambic. Where do you slide your Saison games, pie chart of all of your efforts? Where does that play into what you're doing?
Yeah, so our farmhouse ale program, we kind of prefer to use that term, not that there's well-defined kind of lines between Saison, farmhouse ales and such, but pretty much the terminology we've adopted in that all of those beers are mixed culture fermented with a couple of strains of Saison sac yeast in there, along with lactic acid producing bacteria. But every single one of those beers is fermented with that culture, and 95% of them see some time in oak, primarily in one of our fooders.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
And as far as the timing on those, we're primary fermenting in stainless almost across the board there before
with 340 whatever with pitched what we call Saison yeasts, and then you move it over, or
it's actually pitched from the start with our house culture, which I can say for certain has two Saison strains in it. But okay. I couldn't even tell you where it goes from there. It's just an amalgamation of things that we do have banked at a lab, and we tend to take as far as we can before some process or ingredient perhaps adulterates it in a way where we feel like we have to call up a fresh pitch. So typically gotcha. 5 to 10 generations before we experience that. We see very little drift in that meantime. We haven't pushed it far enough to really experience a discernible drift in this facility anyway. But yeah, then after that primary and stainless, just to cut down on the soil loads and organics going into oak, because we are more often than not simply just kind of solaring, if you will, our fooders, yep. But emptying them totally, keeping them wet. And we love that time in oak, not just for the micro oxygenation, but if there is, variability on the primary side, or just drift over time, we have this really rich kind of environment of our culture living in that wood that can tighten up the spectrum a little bit and bring things in line and give us some consistency across the program over time.
Very cool. So we're friends with Barry, and he's always telling me about the grains that are becoming available, much like Evan does as far as I know, you guys and Evan are not that far apart, right? Like, even though once Connecticut was New York, it's that part of the world where it's not hard to drive from Plan B to you to Barry, right? They're all Kent is who I'm talking about, but you know what I mean? You're all within an hour of each other, right?
Yeah.
So you have a whole bunch of new little legitimate alternate grains going on up there too, right? Like spelts and emmers and random stuff pulled out of the backyard of all the farms up there. Is that where are you playing with those yet?
Yeah, Barry's been just a wonderful resource. Both
He's fun, isn't he?
God, he's a blast. I try to suck up some of his energy when I'm around him, because that guy is a ball of energy in the best way possible. And so he's always been a sympathetic ear, and because they started, let's say, 2 or 3 years before we did, and really they were the first brewery in the state to inhabit a locale like this, you know, a rural brewery. And they're a true farm brewery. If that's a title they embrace, they can certainly own that.
But I mean, like, he's always super excited about grains he's finding. Like, every time I talk to him, I always leave with, oh, I wish I could, you know, I should buy 10 sacks of that and try to make it. And it's usually a Saison kind of thing, right? But
yeah,
it sounds to me like you guys are in a new breadbasket for brewing up there.
Valley Malt, just outside of the state, up in, I guess it's Hadley, South Hadley, Mass. Yeah. So Andrea's, she's perhaps longer than almost anyone in the country doing small batch craft malting. So she's always been there for us, for those of us in the region that are interested and want to support and kind of work with develop local grains. But, much more recently, even after we started 3 years ago, we got Connecticut's first small maltster with Thrall Family Malt, and their story is a fascinating one. The Thrall family is one of the longest continuously run farms. It dates back to the 1600s, all in the same family, and they really they hit it big with, I believe it's Connecticut Shade Tobacco. So that's always been a huge crop for them, but has kind of dwindled in recent years. They've always grown barley as a rotational crop, and they decided to start learning to malt it, trying to malt it in-house. So they're coming at it from the angle of just legacy farmers that know everything about their land and how to grow. And they're having to learn the malting stuff in time, and they've gotten great at it. And
Barry, that must be the story I'm thinking of. That sounds cool as hell.
And Barry being Barry got in Spencer's ear early on. And fortunately he's a guy who's so eager to,
and now he's giving it all up to grow kumquats.
But the emmer thing was great. I think he told Spencer, you know, he's interested in emmer, and next time he saw him, he had 3 acres planted ready to malt. So you got someone who's eager and kind of malleable in the best way possible, who wants to cater to what local brewers want.
Yeah, that's neat. All right, so that's very cool. And that probably takes a little pressure off you on the farm, so you can keep growing fruit trees and fun stuff and not have to be like, and how do I get my own emmer? Anyway, we should talk about Glass One.
We should.
I need a question though. Do either of you Justin Kennedys know? I have 2 bottles, 2 cans for 2 shows, and I believe I have a bottle with a 1 on it.
Yes.
Is beer 1 a bottle?
That's my understanding, and it's the taller of the 2 bottles.
Okay. I only have the 2 for this show out, but I can handle it. What brings us together on Steal This Beer is a candid conversation of beer and what it is, not what we hoped it would be, not what we traded for it, not its value versus, I don't know, crack rock. But what we would do with it if it were in our fridge, hopefully helping you figure out what you should do with it if it's in your fridge. To facilitate this candid conversation, John and I drink blind out of black glasses. The COVID version of the show is Justin goes to what is apparently the world's coolest bodega, grabs us a variety of beer, wraps it up in artisanal foils, and in this case, a...
foils, plural, not just one, but multiple kinds.
I don't know about you, but bottle one is wrapped in very, very shiny, crinkly foil, and bottle two is wrapped in very, very matte, smooth foil. In front of me, I have two.
Plus all of the electrical tape as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And you need that foil. He needs to do one in the foil that's like pocked like a golf ball for aerodynamic efficiency.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, and this one has, I'm sure, the world's coolest small batch electrical tape holding the cap on. I assume to obfuscate some branding, but I had to cut it off like it was a wine capsule to keep myself in the dark. You want me to go first, John? How you feeling? I didn't drink last time, so I owe you guys some.
No. You should be doing it.
All right. So my first sip on this was Hot Thin Booze. And I was like, oh, it's a total fuck up. I can't believe I'm going to have to get mad at this. And then my second and third sip did whatever adjusting my palate needed to do to really enjoy it. There's a textural notice that it's almost uncarbonated feeling, like it's so low carb. It's as if it's very old.
Yeah.
And there's a little tiny banana clove note in there that feels a touch oxidized, but not badly. But then it's settled into this really nice kind of spicy, you know, it's clearly one of the darker lagers, right? Because it's maybe a darker weeded lager or something, because it's really thin, but in a appropriately, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, it's a bad stout. It's like it's meant to be exactly the texture it is. And it's got a neat kind of raisiny note, like a small Belgian, you know, candy sugar beer. But I don't think that's it. It's that spiciness is confusing me. I think it's just a nice, I don't know, what's it called when you put dark charred wheat into a German lager? Which one am I thinking of?
Like Weizenbach?
That's
where my mind originally went, was Weizenbach with this. Because I was getting a little bit more of that spicy clove, not so much the banana at first, and then it was the sort of overripe banana thing in the way back of it. But before I keep going on, Zach, are you drinking blind as well?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I can see the cap. Oh, it does have branding on it. So,
like. Oh, no. Well, then hold back anything that clued you in on. Yeah. Next time we'll have Kennedy either cutting the electrical tape off and not peeling it off was a hard task we shouldn't have asked you to do, Zach. I feel bad. But 2020 Kennedy he might be a step below 2017 Kennedy. We're not sure yet.
We have to wait for the final rankings at the end of this year to come out.
Final rankings, 365 Tuesdays later. We will know if Kennedy was Kennedy we had this year.
This does taste like it has some age on it, though, or it's designed to sort of be an old world. I don't know. This is like a winter warmer kind of sensation for me with the low carbonation. There's a little bit of molasses. There's a little bit of, you know. And that might be the candy sugar that you were thinking of. But there's, you know.
But it's not, the molasses I definitely get. But the problem is it's not pruney enough to be candy sugar. You know what I mean? Like it's short of dried fruit.
It does strike me
maybe
as boozy
raisin,
as all get out, though.
Maybe raisin.
Yeah, raisiny, it's boozy. Plum pudding kind of like. For me, it's a winter warmer English drinking sort of pub ale that could be like a Doppelbach or a Weizenbach or some sort of like hearty cold weather. You know, there's also this nice little, not quite cheesy, but aged earthy hop thing on the very finish with just nice little bitterness as well. That's almost like a little bit of like a tobacco type bitterness as well. But
I like that tobacco note. Yeah.
What do you think?
That without hopefully carving out the part of your brain that's aware who made it. What do you got going on in your glass on your old sniffer?
I think those qualities that John was talking about there at the end kind of make it for me a much more enjoyable beer, at least right now. I mean, on the nose, those, you know, dried fruit, rich raisin things can be really nice, but not the beer I could go for right now. And you're kind of bracing for the sticky sweet to come with that, but it does have this kind of ashy, maybe some of that oxidized cardboardy thing going on that in a way kind of keeps it out of that territory.
Yeah, it does end up light, right? Like it feels like a yellow beer, but tastes like a brown beer. Does that make sense?
Yep, for sure.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's the problem is the way I'm describing it. It feels like the sweetness seems out of place, but it doesn't. It really feels like it's right where it wants to be. Mm-hmm. Those dried fruit sweet notes, and it really is the beer. But every other word I'm using to describe it makes that sweetness seem like it's not, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't the intention. Yeah. But it definitely feels intended.
Yes. And that to me sort of strikes as if Justin's pulling this out of his bodega, that this might be an end cap somewhere of like a seasonal release because it feels like this time of year. I don't think that this is something that would, I'd be surprised if you found any of this in like mid-June. Like that kind of thing. Like this.
Okay, I get that.
Seasonal.
I'm having a hard time pinning down the yeast on this, the fermentation character. It's a bit innocuous right now. And
well, that's why I'm not committing to Belgian, right? Every word I'm describing would have me say, "Oh, Belgian double," except how lean the palate, the body is, and how there's only that little tiniest bit of banana, you know what I mean? Like it's definitely not a phenolic fermentation of the banana clove thing. It's like that's the part that comes from dark wheat and something like a lager yeast. You know what I mean? That's why I'm not being like, oh, it's a Belgian double. Let's move on. I think I'm a little torn here because it smells that way, but doesn't feel that way. Anyway, well, we should move on though, because I'm dying to hear more about Fox Farms.
We should have Zach write his sentence if he's playing along with
us. Yeah, write your sentence. That's
how the game is played.
Where are you drinking this? Who are you drinking it with?
Oh.
Maybe he doesn't.
This is figurative, correct? This isn't literal.
Yeah, no. So the whole gimmick of the show back in the day, if we were doing this properly, you would have come in with beers for us to taste that can't be yours. Right? You can have no skin in the game. We drink them blind and know nothing. And then to give context to anybody who might be thinking about buying them or own them and waiting to open them or whatever, is just, all right, where does this beer fit in your life? Grilling in the summer, you know, out with friends, bottle share, online waiting for other half, you know, where's this beer in your... You've got it. You opening it. Where would you want to drink it? So that's the sentence. Is here's where I'm drinking this beer.
Got it. I probably just found this in the back of the fridge at a family holiday party. Maybe it's been there a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like what 3 or 4 o'clock,
and we got Zach likes that fancy beer.
Yeah. But that was the year before. This is me finding it the following year. Yeah. That's the spot right there.
I like that. That works for me. Yeah, I feel like, so there's a couple random bottles over the years between the ones I did buy to get old, like a 120 and some chocolate stout from Brooklyn and stuff, where it was a 6-pack that I was like, this can wait. And I feel like exactly like, oh, I wonder what the hell happened to that after 4 years kind of drinking.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Johnny Cakes? Yes, I'm starting to unwrap, so from now on, I know what it is.
You guys are drinking Troganator Double Bock.
Nice.
Trog
Independent Brewing.
You nailed it. It says on the website, yeast is lager, 8.2%, chocolate Munich Pilsner malts, hops, German Order Brewer, and Magnum.
No yeast at all. I'm sorry, no wheat at all. That was just in my head.
No, and it's a year-round beer, so... You know, As they say, no food, no problem. Just drink a double bock.
Well, that's the double bock joke, right? Isn't this the fasting beer of the Cistercian monks? Yeah.
All right.
Aiders are forgetting you through 40 days, right?
I'd love to see their sales data to see who's buying this in the height of July heat.
Dude, there is that pocket of German-descended Pennsylvanians in and around Troves.
Hershey, yeah.
They might sell this all to, you know, tradesmen and craftsmen in their valley. Like, there's a weirdly German thing going on in that whole stouts part of the world.
R.I.P. Okay.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to Zach's farm. All right, Zach, I hit the farm notes. Now let's talk about the Hypebeast craft beer notes. Here's how I know you're a Hypebeast craft brewer. You sent beers to me and John, and Cass reacted very poorly to not getting them, which means you must have huge trade value, because Cass will flip a beer in a BMW Z3 and your mother's couch in 4 or 5 moves if you let him build up brand equity. So he was pissed you did not send him beer and you sent me and Johnny beers. So tell me about that side of the Fox Farm business. How did you get on the unless he cans your beer, and then trust me, he's already traded it for, you know, some autographed pinstripe jersey from the World Series.
God. We'll blame it on Justin. Back there, literally, Zach. Justin gave me 3 addresses to send beer to.
Oh, wait, Justin got beer and Cass didn't? Oh, fuck.
Justin probably sent his dad.
Going down for this one.
How convenient that Justin isn't on this show then.
Justin's loaded on fucking Zach's beer, clearly.
That's why he's not on. He's drinking it in the corner right now.
He's making sure he gets it all in before Cass comes and liberates him.
He's shame drinking because he knows Cass is about to come and beat him down.
Anyway, tell us about the beers you sent us and why. That'll be a fun intro to who you are outside the cool ass cool ship and the cool ass other stuff. Would you send us? Did you send a smoked beer? Did I see John Hawk Roush out of this?
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah, look how happy you are.
The camp our Rauch beer this week, and then we also canned near and far on the opposite end of the spectrum a double IPA with some of those grapes I was talking about earlier, grown on the other side of the street here, and I believe I sent you Pebble, which is one of my favorite beers from our farmhouse program. Totally stands out in that we truly highlight the saison side of the fermentation, and dial up our IBUs in a pretty big way to suppress kind of the acid producing side of that culture, and put on a little 4% beer, and it's something we can drink a lot of.
Well, let's talk about that one, because that's at least enough interesting process. The thief should have some joy with that. When you say that one, you're talking about App Oil throwing a ton of high alpha hops in to kill the lactic. And when you say, let's say Zongo, are you just letting it like free run up into the high 90s in the tank? Let's talk through that direction for that beer as opposed to another direction for that beer.
Yeah, our culture is very sensitive to hopping rates and how acid production kind of develops from there, and sensitive kind of in the sense that within this 10 IBU spectrum you can have huge swings in the final character of the beer. Yeah, it's outrageous, and almost everything is in this kind of 10 to 30 IBU range, that beer being a little bit higher than that, but we're playing in a pretty tight little spectrum to try and hit the mark that we're looking for in the beer, and we do see just a huge range within that small range of hopping rates.
Neat. Are you just using something nondescript bittering in the boil, or do you have one you like for playing with the later the later aromatics from the yeasts?
Almost always something nondescript at bittering, and you know, with some tradition, either noble or Slovenian hops. Pebble is kind of breaks from that, slightly higher alpha, American hops, mid boil, late boil, and then just the tiniest little dry hop of Amarillo in there.
Fun. Everybody loves Amarillo. wait, what happened? Nobody, you don't like Amarillo? I love Amarillo.
No, it's fire. It's just like a Yeah. I felt like you were waiting for all of us to stand up and give you a standing ovation or something, and we were just
not me. The hop, John. The hop itself. Anyway, Zach. So go on. And then in tank, you just let it go fucking crazy, warm, get it saison on, get all pretty.
No, actually, we tend to control almost all of our fermentations, trying to keep them below 80. But there's the same thing. There's a range there. A beer like Pebble, yeah, we let that free rise into the high 70s, right around 80, yeah. Versus keeping things closer to like 72.
Okay. Great. Well, I will, once we're off the show and I don't run the risk of offending you, I can't wait to open it, drink it, and wrap my head around it. That sounds like a lot of fun. Thank you. Really, I'm going to quickly go to beer two, and then I want to talk about bringing all these different things together.
So for beer two, can I just jump in here that Justin continues to not disappoint in that if you're looking at this can, if we all indeed have the same can, on the tab, there is a silhouette that has been etched into the...
Oh, I didn't notice it until you just said it.
That is very familiar. So much like Zach, how Zach knew the brewery from his bottle cap the last time.
Oh, it's the fucking stone gargoyle, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know until you saw that. And then I had to look at it, like hold it up to the light. It looks like a Pokemon.
Yeah, well, I first saw it upside down.
Put a Pokemon in this thing?
Yeah, it's so anyway, that's so we're drinking a stone beer apparently.
Unless that's Justin's fine really for what I was gonna say. Job.
Yeah.
That's exactly fine for what I was gonna say on this, because it smells great. I really like what the hops are doing, and it feels very traditional. Like it's bubble gummy, what's the fuzzy baby ducks? It's like that kind of 1998 hop structure where the aromatics were really starting to show aromatically, and it's got those pretty apricotty slash dank weed notes to the hop bill. And then on the palate, it just went straight up West Coast, right? It just tastes like it's just this side of amber, some decided boil hop additions to give it a nice clean bitterness. And it just seems to want to balance its malts against its IBUs and be what I think of as the classic 90s West Coast IPA. So now that you've pointed out it's stone.
Sure. That makes sense.
That this could just be stone IPA, right?
I don't know, but like,
I don't think it's Arrogant Bastard, because it's not bitter enough to be Arrogant Bastard.
But are you getting, or either of you getting a little bit of this alcohol harshness, like this sort of rubbing alcohol aftertaste?
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what every 90s IPA tasted like.
It's just so interesting that is still a feature in this beer, because it does stand out from, you know, even the West Coast that are being made today, you don't get that. So it's... If this is Stone IPA and it holds true to its original intent, I mean, good on them. But yeah, it's got that rubbing alcohol thing that sort of goes into like a little bit of like orange peel.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Zach,
what do you got?
But Zach, as a brewer of IPAs, does this slot in for you as clear as it does for me, like as part of the... what's the evolution of what we do with hops has been in the last 25 years, where the alcohol showing a huge bittering and then huge dry hop addition together being the West Coast thing? Or am I remembering the 90s as stories and not experience? Does that make sense?
It's a good one.
I think when you were like, bring that tie-in to Nebco's beers, like this occupies like that space for sure, where
New England Brewing Company
here in Connecticut, just not quite a West Coast IPA, but just probably late heavy-handed whirlpool hopping or something. I mean, it's got some heat for sure.
I to
stick with the theme, like this is a beer I would have probably know, in 2012, 2013, with Whirlpool hopping becoming the thing.
Yeah, I've opened mine, so I know what we're having. So
what are we having?
Am I allowed to talk?
Yeah, I think so.
It's so. First of all,
we're drinking this after we get out of our time machine in 1998.
Truly exciting fashion, as is always cutting edge by Team Stone. The label is upside down on a can.
This marketing campaign of their
yes. Yeah. So it's frighteningly
original.
Frighteningly yeah. Fresh Stone Enjoy by 10/31/20 IPA. So I think absolutely this is. So what I remember about my first Enjoy by was exactly this type of flavoring, right? I remember thinking that first one used that Zythos pellet, and that there was like a pineapple, apricotty, sticky, dry hop addition on what I just thought was a Stone IPA. And I remember having it in 2012. So Zach, your time machine went to the exact right year. I think this recipe was written in 12.
Okay. This is, it actually looks like it was canned late September in their Virginia facility. So
upside down too. That's fancy.
The thing that I like about this upside down label, which is very little, but, all of the copy is upside down, including the Brewers Association independent seal, which now turns the
bottle makes right it side right side up. I did notice that. And what's funny about that, because I'm so bad at knowing things like that, I was like, this is clearly on purpose, but it looks like they wrote the copy the right way. Why not see it all the way through? And then I was like, oh, wait, that bottle's supposed to be upside down.
That's
Doy. All right, so we've got all these Fox Farm juggling balls in the air, and it makes me think of one of my favorite creative brewers in the world, or creative breweries in the world, and it's Rare Barrel, right? I love when they're just like, well, we had a cool ass sour, we had a cool ass saison, we had a cool ass hazy. So we threw them all in a barrel together to see what would happen. Are you to the point where you're enjoying that liberty of having these different programs so strongly? Like, have you been like, well, save me 20 liters of that stout and let's see what happens if we put it in the barrel we just emptied, you know, saison out of? Are you having that fun on the farm yet in your pie chart of beer structuring?
Not yet. I mean, relatively speaking, in the world of kind of modern small scale craft brewing, like, we are not the most adventurous brewery out there. we do things like with a pretty traditional slant more often than not.
I feel like you're being falsely modest. When you build a room around a cool ship, you're committed to a certain amount of fuckery.
A certain amount of fuckery with a deep tradition.
Yes. Yeah. Traditional fuckery, but fuckery
traditional
nonetheless.
Fuckery, yeah.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we more often than not look to you know what we love about historic styles. And
right, that makes sense.
We haven't really touched on lager too much, but that's something we care a lot about, and have been just pleasantly surprised that people want to drink our traditional European lagers. So more often than not, we're kind of playing in that safe space, but we do have those creative outlets, and that's where the farmhouse program is probably the best canvas to kind of step out of your comfort zone a little bit. I think the other beer I sent you guys was Suceris, which is farmhouse ale with foraged sumac, yarrow, we fermented on second use cherries and raspberries.
That's kind of our
playground.
I knew you had it somewhere. There it is. That sounds awesome. Yarrow's, so I was introduced to yarrow while recording this show, and I still planned to brew with it. And it's now been 4 years and I haven't gotten around to it. So thank you for sending a Yarrow beer, because I think it's a neat ingredient. Now let's talk about, you said you put family grapes into an IPA. I'm not going to be able to resist that, because it probably means I get to say wine things that make John Hall crazy.
No, please.
So I will start with these family grapes from this family vineyard. Are they American grapes or are they European grapes?
They are very much like Northeastern or Northern United States, at least, developed and cultivated grapes. So
Vitis Labrusca.
Yeah, we got St. Croix dominates the red side, and then the whites, mostly Frontenac Blanc, and then another cold hardy variety called La Crosse.
Right on. All right, so yeah, I know those grapes. Do you know the very famous Love My Goat wine out of the North New York state?
I think I got one bottle. Is that of the natural variety?
Well, it's a guy who is completely committed to screw your Vitis vinifera, American is Vitis Labrusca, and he keeps pushing wines made of mostly the grapes you've just listed, and I think even some Concord. And he makes this preposterous juice. And apparently at some point, his father, somebody sold the family name, so he can't call it after his family name. So he's named his wine Love My Goat. And it's just this classic American thing. I'm not saying you should run out and get it, because it's a fine wine. But if you get to fool around with those grapes in your beers, you should know that wine, because it's a standard bearer for the tradition of those grapes. Okay. Anyway, so talk to me about putting it in an IPA, what you got out of it, what you liked. Because in my experience with wines born of those, when those grapes dry out, they don't get super fruity, right? They get a very dry character to them. So how'd you play with them in the beer?
So yeah, we brew this beer typically, within a matter of weeks after harvesting the grapes. In the case of the whites, being grown on a smaller scale and almost always finding their way into near and far, we do crush, destem right on site at the brewery, and then press and then freeze the juice until it's ready to be added to the beer. We love the freezing step, in part to just kind of cut down on any micro potential, and we do add just after high croizen when it's a little less unwieldy. But it is then fully re-fermented. But yeah, we don't see it dry out in a huge way, except when we have held on to this beer just for our own sake and house, keeping an eye on its development over time. Something does happen where the hops start to fade, and you can get a little bit of heat and some of that more delicate character that's coming from the grapes starts to fade faster. So we encourage people to drink the beer on a more rapid timeline than our usual kind of IPA schedule, hopefully within a month.
Oh wow. Oh cool. Yeah. Well then we'll have to get to that right away, John Hall. Very awesome. Thanks for joining us, man. It's super exciting. Sounds like you're having a ball up there.
Yeah, I'm sorry we couldn't do this in person. This would have been fun.
Being in Connecticut, do we suspect that Zach can get into Kennedy's New York State Farmhouse beer book?
Or? Well, I'm sure it's going to be a 50-state set at
this point. You think it's growing now?
Yeah.
Gotcha, gotcha.
And so, if so you act now, you can get the special leather-bound edition.
That's how we got Zach.
Yeah.
That's how we got Zach. It's like those Time Warner books from when we were kids. You can
exactly,
buy
that's
them
exactly
now
it.
And one will come every 6 months for the rest of your life.
Act now.
That's awesome. Well, I look forward to your featuring Kennedy's farm book. All right, let me guess. Do neither of the Justin Kennedys have a letter today?
No.
No.
All right. Well, then I'm just going to say thank you to Zach and let Cass tell people how to reach Zach and us and make sure to get all that straight. And I'll appreciate I can't wait to drink these beers. I might be rushing a little to get to Zach's beers.
Yeah.
Anyway, give it to us, Kennedy. How do they reach Zach? How do they reach us? I mean, give it to us, Cass. How do they reach
Cassidy?
If you would like to write us love letters and hate mail, steelthisbeerpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on all social media platforms @steelthisbeer, Twitter, Facebook, Untappd, Instagram. And yeah, Zach, where can I find you?
Foxfarmbeer.com. That's where we sell 95% of our beer these days. So
is that right? Yeah, you're mailing, right? And you're mailing, we're, right? Because this mailer you not, sent us is fancy. Like, I like
no,
this.
No, no, that's special for you, Augie.
look at me, guys. I'm so cool. You hear that, Cass? I got beers thing, you right? can't get.
Yeah, well, I'm just gonna go pull up there in person in a couple weeks. You know, right. I got my own private tasting.
Check you out. I'm sorry, my bad. I thought I was cool for a minute.
No, yeah, I don't want to.
That's right. That's right. All right. Anyway, Zach. Go on Zach's site and buy these beers and drink that one within a month. I can't wait to reconvene and taste them all. Yeah. Zach, thank you, man. And Thieves, thanks for supporting us through all these crazy times. John Hall almost has a house in every state Justin's writing a farm book about. So,
well, he needs a place to crash at night, so it only makes sense.
So it's just a synergy. It's one of the synergies.
I mean, in some cases, it's a loft or just a small cottage. You know, we have a yurt right now. It's kind of nice. You know,
we got a pool and a pond.
Yeah,
pond for us.
All right, guys. Thanks so much, Zach. Thanks for coming out. I appreciate it. Get at us, y'all.
Cheers.
Thanks for having me.